Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 4th, 2016. The UN says the Sudan government is blocking aid agencies from helping internally displaced persons in Darfur.
So far, we have been excluded from any efforts to assess the numbers of IDPs who may or may not have been arriving into central Darfur.
And Germany is donating millions of euros to help South Sudan's children.
A total of 250,000 children, pregnant women and adults in Unity, Upper Nile, Jonglei, Northern Bahr Ghazal and Eastern Equatoria will be reached with basic primary health care.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But first, we go to Darfur, where thousands of civilians displaced from Jebel Mara because of ongoing fighting between the Sudan armed forces and rebels are urging international humanitarian organizations to deliver relief items to families fleeing Jebel Mara. The UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says they can only access North Darfur, where there is an estimated 92,000 internally displaced persons. Samantha Newport is OCHA's Chief Communication and Information Officer. She says OCHA is restricted from accessing other areas of Jebel Mara as well.
Well, the reason why it's difficult to get to central Darfur is that so far we have been excluded from any efforts to assess the numbers of IDPs who may or may not have been arriving into central Darfur. I do not have any information in relation to newly displaced people in Derabat or that area from the Jebel Mara area. The information that I do have pertains to about 1,000 new IDPs that were reported in South Darfur to the CAS IDP camp.
Khalid Ahmed fled Jebel Mara because of the fighting. Speaking in Arabic, he says there are more than 70,000 IDPs in Dolwa area in need of food and other life-saving items. Speaking in Arabic, Ahmed says he hopes that the international organizations and the international community will be able to provide aid to Jebel Mara. He says many have been displaced in a place called Dolwa in East Jebel Mara. He says they are not getting any assistance from the non-governmental organization based in the area. He says there are more than 70,000 displaced persons and they are in need of food. Ahmed says most people are living in the caves of the mountains. The chairperson of the African Union, Nkosa Dlamini Zuma, and the Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, have expressed deep concerns about the upsurge in fighting between Sudanese armed forces and the Sudan Liberation Army, Abdul Wahid faction, in Jebel Mara. Since the outbreak of violence 6 weeks ago, over 90,000 civilians have been displaced in North Darfur, in addition to 2.6 million already displaced by the conflict. There are also unconfirmed reports of significant numbers of displaced persons in central Darfur, which humanitarian organizations have been unable to verify due to access restriction. Dlamini Zuma and Ban Ki-moon have called on the government to fully cooperate with UNAMID to facilitate its freedom of movement as well as that of all humanitarian actors in their continued effort to protect and provide assistance to the civilian population affected by the fighting. In a statement released by the UN, Ban emphasized that there is no military solution to the conflict in Darfur and has called on all parties to engage in negotiations for cessation of hostilities that would lead to a peaceful settlement. He reiterated his support to the African Union High-Level Implementation Panel for Sudan as well as UNAMID in their efforts to facilitate the peace process. Hundreds of South Sudanese refugees in Uganda have turned to agriculture as a means to earn income. Many South Sudanese sought refuge in northern Uganda after fighting broke out in late 2013. Bonifacio Taban visited Buwale Refugee Resettlement Camp and filed this report for VOA from Kampala.
James McIntyre walked 20 minutes every day to go and clear to work on his farm. Five of McIntyre's sons are helping him expand his farm. Although the grassy bush is taller than his boys, the hard work has not deterred McIntyre and his son from getting the job done. Speaking in Nuer, McIntyre said he decided to start farming because he saw it as the only way to earn a livelihood and overcome the financial challenge he faced as a refugee in the Biala resettlement camp.
When I arrived here in Uganda because of conflict in South Sudan, I saw that this land has a lot of opportunities and I have decided to start farming. And I know doing this job will strengthen me. Although the UNHCR is supporting me, I have to do more in order to support my family.
McIntyre said he harvested 50 kilogram bags of maize last year. He said he sold 20 bags of maize and earned enough money to buy a school uniform for his children. He said he hoped to harvest even more maize this year. McIntyre encouraged other South Sudanese refugees at the settlement camp to try farming.
Because when you produce more food, you will not have any problem. When you store grain, it is not like any other business. But if you sell clothes to earn money, you may still suffer when there is a shortage of food.
Another refugee who turned to agriculture to earn a living is 35-year-old Mary Nyaber Koryom. A mother of 10, Koryom said he never expected to become a farmer until he arrived at the Biala refugee settlement. Now Nyaber Koryom said he is able to feed her 10 children, pay their tuition fees, and buy them a school uniform.
We have lack of tractors and buying pesticides because it's very expensive. We lack support to practice agriculture. We do this work for sake of our own surviving in this camp.
In this settlement camp, like many others across the country, the Ugandan government and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees have allocated land to refugees so they can live on subsistence farming. For VOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban, reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
The German government on Wednesday announced it donated 3 million euros to the United Nations Children Agency, UNICEF, in South Sudan for humanitarian aid. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
The Church of the Affairs of the German Embassy in South Sudan, Peter Benger, told the reporters at the Germany's embassy in Juba Wednesday that the funding will be used for emergency preparedness and response in South Sudan. Benger calls it a very important program
that tackles the problems that we will face in this country with malaria and have in this country with malaria, also with other very dangerous diseases such as the watery diarrhea and respiratory infections.
Besides humanitarian aid, Benga says his government is also involved with supporting other projects in South Sudan, such as good governance, food security, sanitation, and implementing the peace deal. Benga says Germany has contributed at least $300 million towards those projects. UNICEF country representative in South Sudan, Jonathan Vetch, says the funding will primarily be used to help women and children in areas hardest hit by the conflict.
A total of 250,000 children, pregnant women and adults in Unity, Upper Nile, Jonglei, Northern Barabazal and Eastern Equatoria will be reached with basic primary health care and life-saving interventions.
Vetch says families in the former states of Jonglei, Upper Nile and Unity face numerous challenges. With the rain season fast approaching, Vetch says UNICEF will focus on procuring and prepositioning supplies.
The activities will include the provision of key supplies, including anti-malarial drugs, mosquito nets, rehydration tablets, antibiotics, as well as what is even more important, the training of healthcare providers and promoting community awareness on prevention and control of diseases.
This year alone, Vetch says UNICEF will need $154 million to provide health, nutrition, education and child protection assistance. He says so far the organization has received about $45 million.
I'd like to appeal to other donors as well to try and meet the gap. We have at least a $20 million gap in our health program and a $24 million gap in our education program, and also, of course, major gaps in nutrition, water and sanitation, child protection and other interventions.
Benga is urging the government and anti-opposition to focus on implementing the peace agreement and achieving long-term peace and stability across the country. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The governor of the newly created Yei River State swore in state ministers on Thursday. David Lokonga says his government will work hard to deliver services and address issues affecting citizens across the state. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Yei.
Seven ministers, two advisors and the state deputy governor took the oath of office on Thursday in a colorful ceremony attended by some 200 people, including church leaders, elders and youths. The state also appointed all director generals in every seven ministries and formed its own state revenue authority. Lokonga says he will fight corruption and tribalism among the people in the state, and he says he will be friendly to the media.
To pass the messages from the cabinet to the people as grassroots to know what is happening. So this government is a friend to media, all the journalists. I'm so proud. You as being young all, I know that this career is very important. This is what God has made you to be. Be proud that your governor is standing with you to pass messages to our people of what we are planning for.
The new governor promises to order his security officers to protect journalists in the state. Speaking on behalf of the ministers, Stephen Ladu, the state minister for information and youth, says he will adopt an open policy and listen to complaints from citizens.
The ministers will work hard to fight corrupt practices and administrative malpractices within the ministries to ensure public interest is delivered within limit of limited resources available, being human, physical or financial capital.
Governor Lokonga says his government will not depend on oil revenue in Juba, but will work hard to generate its own sources of revenue. Yei has fertile land with rainfall throughout the year, but most farmers in the state are not involved in large-scale agricultural projects. The Kira administration donated 20 tractors to the new state of Yei. Lokonga says Yei's fertile land is an asset for the people of the state. He says the state has other minerals that could generate income.
And I would like to assure you that we have the resources. We have the human resource. We have almost all the minerals and so on. Today that I'm telling you that alone in Kajukeji, the cement factory is actual construction is going to kick off. It's going to be the first cement, which is the quality cement and in a big quantity.
The Bishop of Yei Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan, Hilary Luata Adeba, says the church is expecting state government to work with the community leaders. Bishop Adeba says the church stands ready to work with the new state government.
We will complement what education people are doing, what agriculture people are doing, what the health people are doing. We will complement to the issue of peace and reconciliation among our people, which is very, very important.
Yei River State has four counties, Morobo, Kajukeji, Lanya, and Yei. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Yei.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what our wildlife conservation authorities are doing to protect elephants in South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are the most successful means to fight corruption?
The most successful means to fight corruption is to punish those who go against the law.
Well, the most successful means to fight corruption, I would say, is one, that the civil servants that are the engine room of government should be well motivated. At that angle, you now start to fight it within.
If everybody had access to a minimum wage and maybe they were content with the salaries that they're getting, probably that would help.
We fight it from the grassroots, from below, by teaching it in schools, children, that there's the need not to be corrupt. If we do that, when they get to the position of leaders, they are not going to be corrupt too.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A leading wildlife protection group says conflict in South Sudan has killed thousands of animals, including elephant, giraffe, and antelope. The government of South Sudan and the SPLA in opposition signed a peace deal in Addis Ababa last August, but there are still isolated incidents of fighting. In addition, armed groups on both sides are accused of killing wildlife to feed their troops. Paul Elkan is the Wildlife Conservation Society's program director for South Sudan. He gave an update on the situation to VOA's William Eagle.
Even from the very beginning of this fighting, the both armies, the SPLA and the SPLA in opposition, that both of the armies used wildlife and systematic hunting to feed their soldiers. And that happened in a dry season of 2014 and dry season of 2015 as well. And that had a major impact, particularly on the Tiang migration. And, of course, these guys, and then we had cases where these different soldiers were linking up with commercial markets, and it turned in, it wasn't just a question of feeding the soldiers to do the fighting, it was actually for commercial gain. And during this time, we've been working with the Wildlife Service to cut down on that. And just last week, there was 19 SPLA soldiers arrested by the Wildlife Service with 62 antelope carcasses and 15 machine guns. And so we're in a situation now where, as peace is coming in and the ceasefire is taking place, some of these soldiers, some of private individuals are turning their guns on wildlife for commercial gain. And that's really what's striking right now. And that's the pressure we're dealing with.
What is the solution to this? Have you been in contact with representatives of the opposition and the government to talk about this issue and to find a way to resolve it?
Yeah, we've been in touch with both sides and all parties on this, including some of these other, there's various armed groups in the country. And, of course, they're quite preoccupied with their ceasefire and their deals and security. But we do see that there's sensitivity at the highest levels of both the government, of course, and then the opposition parties to work on wildlife-related issues. I think the problem now, of course, is getting this transitional government formed, and then I think we're going to get a lot of interest from both sides. We've also had some positive feedback from the commanders of the army of the SPLA when this recent arrest was made, where they said, "No, you're doing your job. We need to do it," but a lot more needs to be done. Obviously, there's a humanitarian crisis ongoing in the country. People are suffering, but now wildlife is suffering. It's frankly suffering more now than it has been in the past 2 years. And another thing that we're seeing is also elephant poaching seems to be expanding, and also ivory trafficking. And not just this, this gets across borders. We also have illegal gold mining happening, private companies trying to come in. And so there's this sort of a vacuum of power right now, which has yet to be filled, and it needs to be filled fast. And once it is, we're going to be engaging with all sides of the equation, and hopefully they'll adopt basically a crisis action plan to save the wildlife in the country.
You were saying earlier to me that there's quite a potential by protecting wildlife to help develop local communities or the economy. Could you comment on that?
Yeah. Before this war broke out, we had actually had several international ecotourism companies which were interested in building the first tourism infrastructures and operations in both Boma Park and Bandingalo Park. We do think there is this opportunity that South Sudan, obviously, as security is put back in place, it can benefit from those jobs, from that revenue generation. And And frankly, I think both the government and the opposition, they know that. And they've been there. They understand the importance of it economically.
Paul Elkann is the Wildlife Conservation Society's Program Director for South Sudan. He was speaking from Juba with VOA's William Eagle. And South Sudanese local conservation advocates say the government should protect natural resources and stop soldiers from engaging in poaching. A military spokesman denies government forces have anything to do with poaching. Philip Thorna-Liu has more for VOA from Juba.
The Wildlife Conservation Society says they have evidence that armed groups in South Sudan are poaching elephants and other endangered wild animals. Michael Ophidia, Deputy Director of the Wildlife Conservation Society in South Sudan, says the investigation documented that poaching increased during the last 2 years of conflict.
As the transition is made from war to peace, there is a rapid expansion of natural resource plundering by the armed forces and local and international entities. It is crucial to reinforce and expand our conservation security partnerships, anti-trafficking and protected area management efforts to help secure the natural resources of South Sudan and prevent conflict.
Lopidia says the government, the armed opposition forces and local communities must get involved in protecting wildlife. SPLA acting spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Marco Mayol insists there is no evidence to support the charge that government soldiers are poaching as well as cutting down trees for commercial purposes.
I need the evidence from those who are reported that the report of the soldiers of which unit there in National Park. But when they say that the animals were being killed by the soldiers, I cannot believe on that.
Mayol says the army knows that wildlife is an important asset for South Sudan and has been instructed to protect it. He says the army will carry out its own investigations on poaching, but declined to elaborate. The SPLA in opposition and other armed groups accused of poaching in South Sudan could not be reached for comment. But Lopidia says there is no doubt that all armed groups are involved.
The armed forces SPLA, SPLA-IO, Cobra faction, other armed groups and civilians should be called upon to immediately halt their involvement in wildlife poaching and trafficking and other illegal natural resource exploitation and violators punished by law.
The country has vast areas of natural woodlands, forests and savannas, which are home to various wildlife, including hundreds of elephants and giraffes. But tourists are afraid to visit South Sudan's national park due to insecurity and poor infrastructure. For VOA News, I'm Philip Thorna-Liu in Juba.
And in Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe said late Thursday that he will not back down on his decision to seize control of the diamond industry. Last month, Mugabe gave foreign mining companies 90 days to stop work and leave the country. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare that scaring away foreign investors may be the last thing Zimbabweans need to right now.
In a wide-ranging interview on state television, President Robert Mugabe said Zimbabwe has received less than $2 billion for what he said has been $15 billion worth of diamonds mined since 2009.
So where have our car has been going, and we've been blinded. Lots of swindling, smuggling has taken place, and the companies that have been mining virtually, I want to say, robbed us of our wealth. And that is why we have decided that this area should be a monopoly area, and only the state should be able to do the mining in that area. You cannot trust a private company in that area, none at all. And we should have learned from the experiences of countries like Botswana, Angola, Namibia, etc.
Mugabe included the Chinese mining company Anjin in his indictment, a surprising move for some. China is a key investment partner for Zimbabwe. Officials have referred to China as the country's, quote, all-weather friend, unquote, since the U.S. and European nations imposed sanctions in 2002 over rights violations and vote rigging. But Mugabe says he addressed his concerns about Anjin with the Chinese leader Xi Jinping on his landmark visit to Zimbabwe late last year.
I don't think it has affected any of our relations adversely at all. Don't think so. I told President Xi Jinping that we were not getting much from the company and we didn't like it anymore in this country. So we wanted it to go back. I told him that. Yeah.
Anjin is one of the 9 foreign mining companies now fighting Mugabe's move in court. The case opened this week in Harare. The government said last month that under the new system, the Zimbabwe Consolidated Diamond Company, in which the government will hold at least 50% equity, will now mine the country's gems. But Zimbabwean economist John Robertson says the government isn't actually ready to take over diamond extraction.
That is a nonsensical statement because you actually need cash to do the job in mining. Now they do need capital. Now they do need to bring in the proper techniques that will extract the real value from what's available. And the money to do that isn't there. And the people who are supposed to bring it there are thoroughly discouraged by the fact that they've got to invest 100% of the capital and they'd be allowed to earn an income from only 49% of that capital.
The government says this new system is in line with the broader indigenization policy, which since 2008 has forced foreign companies and landowners to cede control to black Zimbabweans. Mugabe says the law was meant to return the economy to the hands of blacks who were marginalized during British colonial rule. But analysts say that policy and others have sunk Zimbabwe's economy to unprecedented lows. Unemployment is above 80% and the government relies on foreign aid to fund social sectors such as education and health. In 2008, the Kimberley Process suspended Zimbabwe from trading in diamonds following reports that senior government and military officials had taken control of the mines and were smuggling the precious stones. Rights groups reported that the diamonds were collected through forced labor. The suspension was only lifted in 2009 when Harare convinced the Kimberley Process, a world body aimed at stemming the flow of conflict diamonds, that normalcy had been restored. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that report by Sebastian Mofu brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. Now you would allow me to leave you in a dancing mood with the song Hasada Mahako by Isaka Number One.
Isaka Number One.
Okay.
We have been listening to Isaka number one with the song Hasada Mako. Hasada means envy. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.